The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, Paul.
Sarah. Hi. Welcome to season 2.
Welcome to season 2. I'm pulling up my notes for season 2.
I'm having feelings.
I'm having memories, man. I have so many questions for you about this transition from Chicago to Dallas, particularly because Dallas was not your home and Chicago is where you're from.
Yes. All right, but let's
fill people in on what's going on here.
Okay. Welcome, everybody, fishes, folks, and friends. This is season 2 of Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul.
It's our video edition.
Oh, this is the video edition. As you can see, we have cameras and microphones this year. We're getting really into the podcast
world. Yeah, it's very exciting. I even built this little studio in my basement last weekend.
It looks great.
I realized I was looking back through the videos that we posted last season that were not supposed to be videos. Yeah. But I realize I look like I'm in witness protection. So,
I mean, you still look like you're in witness protection, just in a nicer witness protection.
That's true. One with a fake plant.
Is that fake? I was going to ask because it's very well taken care of.
It will look exactly like this for the entire run of our podcast. But I did find my chair back.
That's amazing. Is that different seasons, or you just had two of them for some reason?
I mean, it was just in that crate where I had all my season 1 scripts. I'm still looking for my season 2 scripts, but there were like 4 chair backs.
Do you have all your chair backs from everything ever? Because I do.
Mostly, yeah. Although some shows now are like, it's like a little thing that
they have like a card
in and it
slides in.
It's not great.
Cheap ass. Okay, so to catch everybody up. This is how the show works. We do a rewatch. We rewatch the show together, which you can do with us if you subscribe to our Patreon. Yeah. And then we will talk about the episodes. Today we're talking about season 2, episode 1. And some episodes it'll just be Sarah and I talking and asking each other questions because we haven't seen it. I mean, I haven't seen it in 20 years. Nope. And then we're going to talk about it and ask each other questions. And we took notes and then
notes. There will be some episodes that we have guests.
Yes.
But one way or another.
Good guests this season.
We do have some good guests this season. I'm very excited about it. But one way or another, we will do something called the Callestine Index every episode.
Yes.
And that's. Yeah. You want to tell them about the Callestine Index?
Tell us. No, you tell us. You tell us about it, Sarah.
I will tell you. So the Callestine Index is where it's like our stats for the show, right? It's us talking about when it aired and who directed it and who wrote it and what the ratings were and what was going on in world history and what was going on in pop culture to locate us in a moment where everybody's using flip phones. A PDA comes up at one point in episode 201, which we just watched together, which is kind of wild. That's what we do.
Okay. So let's get into it. Should we just jump right into, we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, like Dallas.
Like we moved the show from Chicago to
with
Dallas.
No warning.
With no warning.
No warning. Okay. I'm trying to pull up my index here. All right.
Okay.
You want to,
yeah, we're going to do the Calistine
let's
Index.
Let's do our first Calistine Index. By the way, Calistine, because I'm Callie's and he's Edelstein, and this is the max amount of creativity that we can put into naming things at this point.
Yes, correct. All right, here we go.
Take it away.
The season 2 premiere of Prison Break was titled Manhunt, and it aired on August 21st, 2006 at 8 p.m. on Fox. It was written by series creator Paul Schering. It was directed by Kevin Hooks, who had become our producing director somewhere during season 1. The premiere drew 9.37 million viewers against the competition in that time slot. The time slot, the competition was a rerun of Wife Swap on ABC, a rerun of 2.5 Men on CBS, and a rerun of Treasure Hunters on NBC.
So to recap the episode, FBI agent Alexander Mahone, played by the marvelous Billy Fichtner, who joined the cast this season, is tasked with capturing the Fox River 8 while the COs, including Bellick, continue to chase them. The team, which is now down to Schofield, Burroughs, Sucre, Abruzzi, and Franklin, they steal a truck. Schofield says that they need to go to a warehouse in Oswego. Meanwhile, Mahone searches Schofield's apartment, realizes that Michael has been planning the escape for months, finds out the secret behind the tattoo. Dun, dun, dun. Teabag forces a doctor, who turns out to be a veterinarian, to reattach his cutoff head, which is as impossible to watch as it sounds. Veronica realizes that she's trapped inside the mansion where she's found Terrence Steadman. So she calls the cops, but instead suited men arrive and, spoiler alert, plug your ears.
Kill her.
You haven't, kill her. Meanwhile, in the hospital.
R.I.P. Veronica Donovan.
Yeah, R.I.P. E. Chance Woods and Veronica Donovan. meanwhile, in a hospital, Dr. Tancredi regains consciousness from her overdose and sees a message from Schofield about a plan.
Okay, so a lot happens, obviously. Speaking of which, this week in U.S. history, on August 17th, Judge Anna Diggs Taylor, U.S. Federal Judge of the Eastern District of Michigan, ruled that illegal wiretapping is unconstitutional.
And they left it at that, and everybody is nothing.
And everyone and everything's been fine. This ruling was in regards to National Security Agency's wiretapping of Americans' communications without a warrant, which is all part of the war on terror. The Justice Department appealed. The program was allowed to continue. A few days later, on August 24th, the FDA approved the sale of the morning after pill without a prescription for women 18 and older. The availability of this over-the-counter drug was a significant decision in the ongoing debate about reproductive rights, and everything has been fine.
And we've never had to talk about it again. Moving on to pop culture, on August 17th, Mel Gibson pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor drunken driving charge.
God, it was that long
ago. That long ago. And was sentenced to 3 years probation. This was the drunk driving incident from July 28th, where he was pulled over and spouted his infamous anti-Semitic tirade to the arresting officer.
And called her, do you remember what he called her?
No.
Sugar tits.
Was this the same tirade that was also the racist tirade, or was that a separate one?
No, that was on the phone.
That was a different one.
The anti-Semitic was an arrest.
That was in person. Yeah. And the racism was on the phone. Fair enough. He's covering so many bases.
I believe his ex. Yeah, so many bases. He's just, hitting all the groups.
Hitting all the groups. Cool. Thanks. On August 18th, Snakes on a Plane, starring Samuel L. Jackson, was released. The film gained significant attention due to its campy premise and internet buzz, becoming a B-movie classic. Right. Anyway, moving on. Otherwise, in pop culture, this is sports stuff, so you might have to explain some of what it means to me, but I think I got it. August 25th, Jerry Rice signed...
The greatest wide receiver in NFL history.
Super helpful, thank you. I was imagining this was a football thing. Signed a one-day contract for, wait for it, $1,985,806.49 to retire with the San Francisco 49ers, officially ending the legendary receiver's career back where it began. The sum was ceremonial, representing Rice's first year in the league, 1985, uniform number 80, and current year 06, and the 49ers 49. It is now the number that I will use to negotiate my salary from now on. Ah. My first year in the business, plus my SAG number, plus my age, which means I will be retiring after my next job. Thank you.
Yeah, that's excellent.
We are going to go to a quick commercial after our rewatch and our index. And again, we will be back.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, we're back.
All right. We're back. Okay, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this episode, man.
Okay.
First of all.
Yes, go.
Let's talk. I'm watching the time because we could do 2 hours, right now just about getting from Chicago to Dallas.
But so give me your
But let's
quick
talk about
version.
Season 2 in general. Okay. Let's talk about season 2 in general.
Okay. Bill Fichtner.
It's a big deal when you, I mean, I think we knew that the show was a hit. Right. So we knew that there was going to be a season 2. I don't, they probably announced it somewhere along the lines in season 1. I certainly didn't know if I'd be back because, you know, people get killed all the time.
Samesies, I was dead.
although we will get to this later in season 2, my representatives were very communicative with the Prison Break powers that be very early on, even in season 1, like around pilot season, saying, please don't hamper our ability to get something else. Mm-hmm. I wasn't working I wasn't working 7 days an episode. So it was like, if I had an opportunity to go shoot a pilot somewhere else,
right?
You know, so there was a good relationship there, and they were like, no, he'll be back for season 2. So I knew that at some point. I don't remember what. I didn't have a 22-episode deal, though. I had like another 15, 20 seconds or something.
Something, yeah.
And what did you and I know that – and I don't remember finding out it was Dallas at the last minute as much as you do, but I know. Tell us your story there.
Well
– unless you feel like you told it season 1.
No, I don't think so. So. I mean, please. I remember I'd bought an apartment in Chicago, in Wicker Park, near that I actually just sold, near where you lived with your brother. And I remember leaving at the end of the season. And I do remember being told, like, we'll see you next season. I don't remember when that happened. But we had like a 10-week hiatus. It was super short. And I went back to New York, where we were living at the time. And I remember walking down the street in Brooklyn. And my phone rang and it was Gary Brown. And he was like, we're moving the show to Dallas. And I was like, we go to camera in like 3 weeks. I mean, it was less than a month before we started shooting is my memory of it. I don't have like exact dates. And I was like, you're crazy. Like, we all have apartments. Like, we didn't move our stuff out of Chicago. I know Wentworth didn't either.
No, you're going to be back
in
2 months.
You're going to be back in 2 months. Yeah. And he was like, we're moving the show to Dallas. And like,
people probably had signed leases and extended things.
Well, the whole crew thought they had a job. And so that was the real heartbreaker, is like, there wasn't much shooting in Chicago at the time.
Oh, look, my camera's doing that thing now. Okay. Look, do you see that?
Oh, it's tracking you.
Yeah.
Dude.
How did that happen?
I don't know. It's been really weird and jumpy this whole time. I'm just listening, using my ears.
Okay. It's recording okay, though. All right. Let's talk about William Fichtner.
Let's talk about William Fichtner. I love Billy so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was a huge addition.
And a huge get. Like, he was...
That's what I mean. It was a big deal to get him.
By the end of season two, I had an enormous crush on him, which was funny. Season two? Maybe season four? Yeah, I thought it was really funny. I thought it was so funny that I told him, and I thought he would think it was funny, too. He did not.
He didn't? He was uncomfortable?
Yeah, he was like, okay. I also didn't realize then until years later when I did The Company You Keep, and he played my father, that he's 20 years older than
me. That he was older than you.
Like, in my head, we were sort of peers-ish. And then, you know, anyway, it was... But he's a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, and a great guy.
And a great guy. A really, really, really great guy.
And a great piece of casting. And a really interesting character that what they decided to do was they said, we need someone chasing this guy. Mm-hmm. We need a foil. And it's not Bellick. That's different. And it's not Kellerman because that's different. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing something different with Kellerman, but they need someone who, like, ooh, has he met his match kind of thing. We need another crazy genius. We need another crazy genius.
We need someone who can out Schofield.
Yeah. Right.
Do you remember their ship name that the audience gave them? Always killed me.
Wentworth and Mahone's? Mahone?
They called him Scone.
Amazing.
Which is just marvelous.
I am going to call him Mahomes because of Patrick Mahomes over and over again.
Oh, God.
So I got to just get...
Okay. I'll correct you every time because I don't care about football.
Okay. I have a question for you. Sarah's OD.
Yeah.
We don't see that in season one, right?
You do. The very last thing you see of her in season one in that montage is like goop running out of her mouth, totally ashen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Of course.
On the thing.
And I'm sure we talked about this, but I have no memory of anything ever.
It's menopause.
So, menopause.
Yes.
Did intentional, unintentional, you decided unintentional?
We decided unintentional. I think the goal was make the pain go away at any cost.
But not for, not existence go away.
I think that's two steps. I think she thought one step. I think it was just make the pain go away.
Relapse.
Just.
Heavy relapse.
Just stop. I can't take responsibility for this decision. I do think it's, you know, we, in between the seasons, we talked a little bit about the AA of it all. And, you know, I dug back into the big book and she's reading it in this season. Or in this episode. But yeah, it never really comes up again. Like, they never have a conversation about, like, as somebody who tried to kill herself. You know what I mean? Like, they don't treat her like somebody who's a suicide risk. They treat her like somebody who's a...
Right, treat her as a relapse.
As a relapse. That's right. Yeah, and interestingly, we started the season with two scenes, with two women in them, which I thought was really cool. Catherine Willis... Catherine Willis, I mentioned her when we were watching before. She's a fantastic actor. She's a Dallas or Texas local. She was in Friday Night Lights. I think she played Jason Street's mom. And then we worked together again in The Long Road Home. She's just one of those like local hires. Like actually, like we had all over Chicago that was just like, oh, she's a, what did somebody use this for? She's a Swiss Army knife. She can do anything.
Amazing.
Yeah, she's great. She's really great.
That's a good thing to be described as. Speaking of really great, Jeff Perry, who plays Terrence Steadman. I'm sure we talked about him in season one. But, I mean, he's been a hero of mine since I grew up in Chicago. He's one of the founders. Him and Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney founded Steppenwolf Theater, which kind of reinvented, you know, American acting in the 70s and 80s. I grew up seeing him do True West and... Bomb and Gilead. It was like that theater is one of the reasons I wanted to be an actor. Yeah. It was like a thrill to even get to work there. And when Jeff would come, when we were doing shows there and Jeff would come to a rehearsal or to a preview or something. You know, he's a big deal, and he's also one of the sweetest guys ever. We've become really close friends subsequently, but like, awesome. Prison Break was the first chance I got, no spoiler alert, but chance to work with him, even though we'd been in other things together. Okay. And he's just, he's just such a badass actor. I still feel like he's not ever gotten to do on film what mm-hmm. The kind of roles that like Malkovich and Laurie Metcalf mm-hmm. and Joan Allen and so many of the, and Tracy Letts and Carrie Coon, so many of the other Steppenwolf people have gotten to do. Mm-hmm. He's just a mm-hmm. beast of an actor and a great director. Also, his daughter is Zoe Perry, who is the mom on Young Sheldon.
Oh, whoa.
Which is a piece of metacasting. I mean, she's a great actor. Right. But he and Laurie Metcalf, it's Laurie. So Jeff and Laurie Metcalf were married, mm-hmm. and they had Zoe. And Laurie Metcalf played Jim Parsons' mother on Big Bang
Oh, that's
Theory.
Wild.
Yeah, and she looks exactly
that's
like
that's amazing. Laurie Metcalf's an astonishing yeah. actress. She's incredible.
And so is Zoe.
Yeah.
And so they cast Zoe as almost like the young Laurie. I mean, she had been working a lot anyway, but yeah. So,
that's amazing.
Anyway, Chicago trivia.
We talked about this when we were watching it. What he does with his eyes, he has this kind of liquid gaze that like,
yeah,
it conveys so much shame and defeat
shame.
With such economy. It's really like, he's one of those actors who doesn't have to say a word. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I found myself in this, in a way that was different with Billingsley, who played Terrence Steadman before. I have sympathy for Terrence Steadman here.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because I love Jeff.
But no, because I don't
I look
know
at
him.
That guy and I'm like, yeah.
There's a vulnerability.
So do you feel
to
that
him.
Way too?
Yes, there's a vulnerability.
Yeah, there's a sadness there. Oh,
absolutely.
By the way, I think he was Emmy nominated a few times for Scandal. He played the chief of staff on Scandal.
Oh, no way. Good for him.
And he was fucking incredible.
Okay, so we wrote.
I was going to talk about.
Down.
Sorry.
Yeah. What did you want to talk about that
yeah.
we wrote?
One of the things I wanted to talk about, and we'll get to this certainly in some of our work that's coming up, but I was just thinking about Teabag and Haywire have obviously gotten split off, but the six of those guys in a car is that for all the claustrophobia shooting wise of season yep. one, what happens is you're shooting in a prison or you're shooting in a stage for a prison is you end up, everyone has their little spaces, right? It's like, oh, I go into that corner when we're not
right.
when between setups mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I go into this corner. This season, there was so very little stage work.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the reasons we went to Dallas. Yeah. They're supposed to be on the run. You have to have all this different mm-hmm. topography. So like you're shooting out there in a car on the mm-hmm. road. You're driving 2 miles mm-hmm. every take yep. and then you're driving yep. back and you're in that car
and
together.
The air conditioning has to be off
and there's nowhere to go. It's 106 degrees, and so when they're like, okay, you guys can get out of the car, you like get out of the car yeah. and you can go sit in a van,
right?
It's, but you have no home base. It makes people after a while
crazy.
Cranky yeah. and uncomfortable mm-hmm. and if a director or if a production gets behind the eight ball a little bit, like if it doesn't feel efficient,
oh yeah,
it can get very frustrating. Like, also, you're fighting the light. You're in natural
uh-huh,
light all
uh-huh.
day. Like nothing is
no,
controlled.
So like if the nice lighting is in, you know, if you're trying to backlight something and the sun is rising in the east, if you don't get it before 11, now it's top light and it's not going to match. And it's, yeah.
Right. And so there's a lot of hurry.
And
hurry,
a lot
hurry.
Of really early mornings. I mean, I remember waking up uh-huh. to be in hair and makeup by 4:30 or 5 a.m. so that we could catch
Was that for the
sunrise.
Light or was that to beat the heat? Or oh, yeah.
Catch the sunrise. Oh, to maximize the number of exterior daylight hours that you could
right.
shoot.
Right.
And
right.
again, not really until I met up with Wentworth and we were sort of like, you know, on the run together. But that stuff was, you know, those are just the realities. Whereas like shooting in that prison, you know, you could just shoot in the prison as long as you wanted to shoot in the prison.
Yeah, and it was tough, and we talked about that, and they had to build the stages and stuff. But it was, again, it's a controlled environment.
Well, it was a different show.
In a way that, like, shooting on, it's a completely
it's a different show.
It's really, they really reinvented it, right?
Every season. And sometimes it worked better than others, but I actually think it's really brave creatively to go in and be like, okay, so we did this thing that succeeded. Now let's take it apart and start over. Same people, but...
Same people, same dynamics, right? But also physically, visually different show. Yep. And then also you've created a show where every two episodes, I mean, every episode, but really every two or three episodes, another element is introduced that like just puts the stakes through the roof. And it's like, how do you, I mean, I think that's part of why you introduced Mahone. Mm-hmm. It's part of why you split Teabag off, because there's another, like you're creating all these obstacles again to their freedom. Yeah. Kellerman's going to end up coming.
Yep.
Mahone is there, you know, so it's not just the Great Escape. It's like you have, they were so good at, like they did it in the prison and then they figured out a way in season two to do it where you have all these different forces bearing down on Michael's plan.
And you have enough different storylines that no one actor has to work 8 days a week. And that's also something I think a season two show gets good at, is looking at, you know, okay, so we've got a Teabag storyline over here and we've got a tweener storyline over here. And even like, you know, Mahone and Schofield tend to anchor the season.
Yeah.
So that there's a little bit of a break, because shooting outdoors in over 100 degree heat is just, it's brutal. I mean, I remember the first season of Walking Dead, like we did six episodes. That was the whole first season. I was dead on my feet by the end of that season, because the entire thing is daylight exterior and you're just like,
you mean like a zombie? Sorry.
You should be.
So don't be
I'm not mad at you. That's just the look.
I remember when I was trailing. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I get those from a 14-year-old. Speaking of which, one of the joys of season one for me was that I had a 4-year-old niece. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to live with my brother and his wife and my sister-in-law in Chicago, I got to spend time with this niece and this woman I was dating. They become my wife. It's like we got to know my niece. She's staying with me this week.
Oh, wild. Wait, but she's like a grown-up.
She's 20. She's 20. She's 23.
Dude.
She's a college graduate. She's been out of college for a year.
Well, I mean, this is what's so crazy. We were just talking about this before we started doing all this. We were, you know, looking to see if we could get Wade on the podcast. And in my head,
that's Wade Williams, who played
Bellick. Who's one of the reasons the show was such a success and a phenomenal actor. Yeah. And again, because we all felt like peers, I assumed that Wade and I were, you know, I didn't think we were the exact same age. Like I was in my 20s when I started the show and he'd had a big career already on like Broadway and in movies and stuff. But we found out that like, you know, he was born in the 40s and I was like, oh.
I still don't. Wait, I'm still getting my head
bonkers.
Around. We were in Collateral together before Prison Break, and I was in my early 30s, and I thought he was in his early 40s, but I guess he was in his 50s.
I think that the takeaway is Wade Williams aged better than anyone we know. Because, I mean, like,
he's probably also one of those guys who looked 40 when he was 20.
Maybe. Yeah. One of those little kids, you meet them at four, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
You're going to look
the same. But then for 40 years, he looked 40.
Totally. And then he looked 50 for the next 40. I mean, it's just really wild.
Yeah.
And I think about like what a toll that takes on you when you're older. I mean, if he was in his 60s when we were doing that, I got to give him even more credit for like, he never complained. You know what I mean? Like that's hard, physical, exhausting work in those conditions. And he did fantastic. There are so many other things that we said we weren't going to talk about.
But we're running out of time, aren't we?
Because I want to get to fan questions. I want to get to at least a couple of the fan questions. So let's leave it there for now. We can pop some of these other questions and things to each other later. We'll take a quick break, then we'll come back and we'll talk about fans.
Great. We'll be right back.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, hi. We're back.
Hi, we're back.
So,
all right, fan questions.
Fan questions. People drop this on our comments and Instagram, the @PrisonBreakPodcast handle. Okay, there's a bunch of different ones that I was looking at. One of them I thought was kind of interesting. I mean, again, some of these we'll get to over the course of the season because some of them are very broad. But this one I thought was interesting. At Chana Podolsky, I apologize for being terrible at pronouncing names. The scenes where Kellerman has Sarah captive, did it affect you two after filming?
Yes, it did me.
Talk to me.
I you don't want to save this for the when we get into the nitty-gritty?
We totally can, although I will say that there's so much nitty-gritty that we will probably.
Okay. I found, and I, you know, always like, I was a kid that played guns and I played cops and robbers and I loved that thing. And so I was just, and I'd played cops on shows before and beaten bad guys up. The scene when I kill Letitia. She was so good. Adina's such a good actor that when she was begging for her life, it really got me.
Wow.
It was upsetting. I remember like being like upset. And then the scene that we had, the bathtub scene, I found very upsetting. We were really good friends by then. Mm-hmm. And it just felt, I don't know how to say it. Like it didn't like, it wasn't hard to do physically, but it made me feel gross. Mm. Like I had a physical response to it. Also, we'll talk about when someone actually got hurt, mm-hmm. which was mm-hmm. a low point. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that stuff, you know, a lot of times like chasing LJ with a gun down an alley felt cool. having you tied up and dunking you in a bathtub and electrocuting you and that kind of thing, it didn't feel cool.
You know,
what about you?
Well, it's interesting. In some ways, I think because we had become friends at that point. And, you know, part of that might have been the Dallas of it all because you had such a full life in Chicago that Dallas, I mean, first of all, we had scenes together, which we just simply didn't do before. But
And a lot of stuff to talk about and kind of explore, like acting wise.
Absolutely. But, you know, because you were more on location than you had been in Chicago, by then we'd become friends. Mm-hmm. Those scenes were easier for me because I knew you and I trusted you. And so there was that, like, I know that this is somebody who has control of themselves as an actor and won't do that thing where they're like, oh my God, I was just so in the moment. And you're like, that's literally not. That's literally the opposite of the job. Like the job
Correct.
Is to have control of yourself as a human to create a Correct. Dangerous environment. And so I was grateful for that kind of thing. And I think in a kind of interesting foxhole way, I trusted you more afterwards. Do you know what I mean? Because I was like, we just went through some real shit.
for sure. And I had the same experience.
Did good work together, and that was
also. I was when we get to the bathroom scene, I'll talk about the trust that you put in me, given what happened before we shot that.
Yeah,
scene.
That was real. That was real.
And then I was like, well, we're not going to be able to
shoot this scene. I also don't remember. Oh, that's funny. That never crossed my mind. I don't remember what number that is. We've got a ways to get there.
I don't either. I don't think we do.
Really?
I think it's in the first third of the season.
Whew, all right. I think I'm ready to watch that again, but I'll be honest, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's what we have time for today.
Well, let me ask one more question because this is very timely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So at okay. Jordan Sharon's asks, what were your expectations of season two before reading the scripts? Were there predictions of what happened to the Fox River 8 that were close to what was actually filmed? You can take either part of that you want, but like going into season two, did you have a like...
Me, personally, I had... I don't think I was experienced enough in TV to even give it a guess. Mm. And then, you know, this show flouted certainly my expectations at every turn. Mm. I was just every episode, every script was like jaw drop. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then where my character went, I mean, we'll get to it. I think it's probably next episode since Kellerman wasn't in episode one. The thing where I got to suddenly, I mean, I got to do Owen Krevecki, which was just really like one scene. Mm-hmm. In the first season. But when I got to like get out of the suit and like go to the NA meeting and like become your mm-hmm. friend and be Lance, I mean, I was in fucking actor heaven.
Yeah.
It's just actor heaven.
You got to do
and to do it
a
with
lot
you,
of
and to do it with such a good actor. I got to do a lot of fun stuff. And I got to do a lot of great action stuff that I love to do.
That was such a fun season for you, actually, as I think through it. Like the giant, the like vicissitudes of the Kellerman
huge
of it all.
Yes. One of my least favorite scenes I've ever done.
Oh. Let me know when we'll get there. I'm super curious about that.
I will.
Yeah, one of the hardest things that I'd ever done, and it wasn't a bathtub, wasn't the torture stuff. One of the hardest things I'd ever been asked to do was in season two. And it was one of those seasons, one of those scripts that you read it. And I was like, I don't know if I can do what I need them to do, what they need me to do. I don't know if I can deliver it. It was a spooky one. I mean, in terms of what I was expecting. Oh, sorry. No, go on.
Well, what were you expecting? And did you, as the female lead of the show, did you have a sit down with the writers, producers, and they said, here's what's going to happen kind of thing? Or did
not that did I remember because I wasn't living in LA. I remember hearing that some of the cast who was in LA would go in and be like, hey, what do you guys? But no. And I also like, I didn't feel like the female lead of the show because that had been Veronica. And so when.
Right.
I don't think I knew that Robin was leaving the show until I read that first script. And I was like, whoa, that took me by surprise.
Right. That I knew.
I expected the NA of it all. The sort of metamorphosis of Sarah into somebody with a totally different level of agency and rage. I loved as I read it. Like you, I wasn't at a place in my career where I ever would have asked for it. Like the idea of going in, even though season one, I was like, I'd really like her to be an alcoholic. But the idea of going in at that point in my career and saying, hey, I'd like to do this and I'd like to not do this. I don't think was really on my, but you know, I don't know. When if we talk to our writers again, I'll be curious to see if we had those conversations and I just don't remember them. I don't know.
Cool.
But yeah, I think we do have to leave it there, right? Because we're kind of, as we do.
We do.
We're sort of running.
And a lot of the questions that we have listed here are kind of season two questions in general, which we will get to. We'll work through and we'll get to all of them. Thank you, everybody, for being here for episode one of season two. We're excited to get into it.
Oh my goodness.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Watch Party episodes on Patreon. You'll also get Fan Fiction Fridays.
Yeah.
You can do that on the show page of wherever you're listening right now. Yeah. And We have a call-in question for the week because we have a call-in line. The number is 4013-P-BREAK. And our question is...
Okay, the question...
If you were on death row?
Yeah, it's the wrap question. It's the wrap-up question we asked all of our guests last year. And I was like, oh, I want to hear what the fans have to say.
Oh, so if you were on death row, that's never going to happen.
Nope.
But if you were on death row, what would your last meal be? And why?
So call us.
And we'll play our favorites in a special episode later in the season.
Absolutely. And so this means that we should pivot our wrap-up question for this season. So I'm going to ask you, Paul, if you were fleeing the law, where would you go and why, right? Michael and Lincoln are headed to Panama to open a scuba shop, a dive shop. It's that like final scene of Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
Where are you? What are you doing? And who are you bringing with you?
Maybe? I mean, for my own, well, hopefully my kid.
Okay.
And hopefully like the Caribbean.
Okay.
Or the South Pacific, like blue water Beach. And sand as opposed to like mountains and rivers. I mean, obviously not a city probably.
Right. You're not going
but
to Blackfoot,
beach.
Montana?
No.
Okay.
No, not my jam on that front. Like, yeah, like tropical. From a practical.
Wait, what are you doing? Are you
like, where could I go where everybody would, I'd blend in. I'd have to go to like Russia or Poland, I suppose, which I don't want to do. Am I offering, the Black Sea. Am I opening like a surf shop? God, oh man.
I just had a vision of you like doing guitar sets at like some beach
at, like,
bar
hotel.
On like,
sure.
Like Eleuthera or something in the Bahamas.
If I'm wanted in this way, that sounds like a great option. What about
just
you?
Just playing Margaritaville over and over and over. And then going into
step
like.
On a drop top.
Totally.
Be-de-ba-ba-ba.
And then the next
and
song
then
is
going into
Aruba,
like La Vida Loca.
Ooh, I wanna... Oh, yeah.
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 And then like La Vida Loca. And then,
yeah.
And then I Like the Way You Move.
No Beatles.
Okay. What about you, Sarah?
I don't know. I don't have an answer to this yet. But that's okay. We have another 21 episodes for me to think about.
Oh. She's putting it off. Okay.
Yeah, because we'll have another one of these. So in the meantime, thank you to everybody who's tuning in. Don't get hunted out there.
But if you do get hunted, remember to rub yourself in.
Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts.
Absolutely.
And toilet
water, God.
Apparently, from season one.
Okay, that's enough of that. Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Caliber Studio production.
Your hosts have been inmates, Sarah Wayne Callis and Paul Edelstein.
Is producer Ben Haber.
Getting us all caught up in the prison yard is editor and sound designer Jeff Schmidt.
The front man of our jailhouse rock band is Paul Edelstein, who made all of our music.
Our prison yard tattoo artist, logo and brand designer is Jen Nunciato from Little Big Brands. Check them out at www.littlebigbrands.com.
And follow us on Instagram at Prison Break Podcast or email us at pbpodcast@caliber-studio.com or call us at 4013-PBREAK.
All right, say this with me. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Prison Breaking Sarah and Paul
with Sarah
has
and
been
Paul
a Caliber Studio
a
production.
Caliber Studio
Thank
production.
You
Thank you
we'll
for listening.
We'll get better at that.
Yeah, we will.
Bye.
See you next time.